So my name is Chris Fortlick. I'm a collaboration architect out of the Microsoft Technology Center in Boston. We're going to be spending the next 75 minutes talking about best practices for managing and administering SharePoint Online in OneDrive for Business. So I've been with Microsoft for about 8 years, focused primarily on Office 365 and SharePoint. I also have the privilege of being what's known as an insider within the SharePoint team and an Office 365 Ranger, which means in addition to working with customers and partners on a regular basis, I get to work very closely with the product team on strategy, roadmap, vision for things like SharePoint Online and OneDrive for Business. And I've also been fortunate to work on two SharePoint books with Sue Hanley and Scott Jamieson. So that's enough about that. This session is a similar session to one that I've delivered at the past couple of SharePoint conferences, TechEd and Ignite. The content is different as the product keeps evolving. I keep changing the scenarios, but I do want to reference that this session, as well as the prior three deliveries of this, are all out there on Channel 9. So a few folks have been asking about the content from all of the sessions this week. All of the slides, all of the recordings are being put out there on Channel 9. This session is going to go pretty quick. It's a 300-level session. It's about 90% live demo, so I'll be going through this at a pretty good clip. So feel free to go back after and watch it on demand and slow me down. So enough about me. I want to talk about you guys. So how many of you are using SharePoint Online today? It's a little bright up here, so it looks about half of the room or so. How many of you consider yourselves IT professionals? So you're managing the server, you're managing the service, okay? How many of you are developers, you're building applications? A few of you, all right. And how many of you have some other role? You're a project manager, you're an analyst, an IT director. How many of you raised your hand all four times? All right, so again, I've been working with SharePoint since 2001, and I know that many of us wear multiple hats when we're managing and working with SharePoint. So the target focus for this audience is really around putting our IT professional hats on of how do we govern and manage the service. So we're going to cover four very broad topics. We're going to do a very quick primer on Office 365 and how identity management works within the service, because that's really a core aspect of understanding, recognizing that half of you aren't using the service today. We're going to very quickly then go into some quick SharePoint Online kind of primer. But the majority of the session, I'm going to spend answering the top five questions that I get asked on a regular basis from enterprise customers that I work with at the Technology Center. So in my role, I get to work with some of the largest global customers on thinking about their strategy, direction, architecture for moving into Office 365. And this has been a very common pattern and very common set of questions that continue to get asked over the last 4 or 5 years. And I'm going to summarize some of those, and I'm going to, more importantly, point you at 3 or 4 different ways of addressing those challenges. Everything I'm going to show you today is all released. There have been a number of great sessions throughout the week from Navjot and Jeff Tepper and Ruben and others that have shown you what's coming over the next few months. I'm going to show you everything that's already in the product. So what's in there, some of it might be in first release, but the key thing is these are things that are actionable that when you go back to your desk, you can start to look at and start to leverage in your environment. And then again, refer you back to Jeff and Navjot and Chris's sessions to look at some of the roadmap for things that are coming in the next few months. And then I'm going to close at the end with some resources. I created a blog post already that's out there on TechNet. I'll give you a link to it. But I've linked to 10 or 15 different white papers, TechNet articles, other things to help you with actually setting up most of the things I'm going to show you throughout the session. So for the Office 365 admin primer, we're going to cover basically topics around identity management, general service health and availability, the concept of first release if you're not familiar with what that is, and then just the Security and Compliance Center, which is something that I talk quite a bit with customers about, because usually we're used to having a SharePoint admin or Exchange admin, and more these services around e-discovery, compliance, data loss prevention are all being rolled up into the Security and Compliance Center. So helping customers understand really what that is and how do we use that to govern and manage SharePoint and OneDrive. So I mentioned I work with large enterprise customers. Most of my customers have Active Directory today. So what you typically do when you're managing this environment is you have a utility known as AD Connect, which if I just grab my little pointer here, that is something that will either run in your premises in your data center or somewhere like Azure that connects to your on-premises AD environment, and it runs on a scheduled basis, and it synchronizes your on-premises user identities, mail-enabled security groups from your on-premises Active Directory up into Azure Active Directory. Some customers are using what's known as password sync, which is not syncing the actual password, it's syncing a hash of the password. And in those cases, you can use Azure AD, not just as the identity provider, but also as the authentication provider. And you can use it for Office 365, including Yammer, as well as other services that might be outside of the Microsoft cloud. Again, I'm not going to get into licensing today. Talk to your account team about what you own and what you don't own as far as the services. But at a general level, customers are syncing from on-premises AD via free utility AD Connect up into Azure AD. We're then using that to build things like the user profile inside of SharePoint. We're using those identities in the cloud to then manage and assign permissions and roles and other aspects. Now, many of my customers are also provisioning licenses, license assignment, and sometimes role assignments, whether you're a SharePoint admin or a global admin, via PowerShell. And I'm going to show you a few different scenarios in PowerShell throughout the scenario to help you with automating things as well as working through the browser. Some customers say they don't want to do password sync. They may want to do federated identities. So Microsoft's federation product is Active Directory Federation Server. We work with ADFS 2.0 or 3.0. We also work with other third-party identity providers such as Okta, Ping, and others. There's a whole Works with Office 365 identity management program. I'm going to focus on the Microsoft scenario today, and I'm going to focus primarily on what's built into Office 365 Azure Active Directory, and I'll talk a little bit about managing things with ADFS. So the focus is really around using the Microsoft technologies. But again, if you're using another third party for authentication, MFA, MDM, et cetera, similar concepts will apply. So I'm going to go ahead and do a quick demo of a couple of the core services within the Office 365 Admin Center. So this is the new Office 365 Admin Center. It's gone through a bit of a refresh over the past few months. A couple of things I like to point out from an admin perspective. First off is really, you know, making sure you're taking advantage of the Service Health dashboard to understand and manage what sort of incidents or issues that are going out there. There have been some announcements made this week around what we're doing to go ahead and tailor some of these alerts to not just tell you when a region might have an issue or an environment, but actually give you more specific messaging to say when it applies to your tenancy, and even more importantly, your users. Another big area within here is also the message center. So one of the big challenges that customers often express is staying up to date with all of the changes inside of Office 365. So it's very different from when we managed SharePoint on-premises, where we controlled when updates rolled out in our environment. They've done some really great things in the message center to help you with understanding when you've read a message or not, but more importantly, categorizing these messages. So understanding when there's something you need to do in your environment to plan for a change. So we may be introducing a new service. Maybe you're filtering things at your firewall, and you want to allow certain IP address ranges or ports or domains to be allowed through. We're going to communicate that to you through the admin portal, as well as things that we might notice. So if there are issues that are going on, sometimes we've actually identified issues on the customer's end. Maybe they have a certificate that's about to expire, and they're using that for ADFS. We'll actually try to alert you to things that we think may cause issues in your environment as well through the admin center. The other big important concept is to understand this concept around first release. So I know that about half of you are using the service today, so you may be familiar with this. Last year, we introduced the ability for first release to not only be turned on at the entire tenant level, but actually at selected users. So first release is the idea that it's fully supported features. It's not beta applications. But the idea is that we want to give some customers a sneak preview of certain things. So maybe the new document library experience or the new list experience. We want to help you to actually see that. Some customers in the past would turn first release on for the entire tenant. And maybe they had a test tenant. Now that we have the ability to do things with targeting at specific users, you could pick four or five people inside of the IT department, some of your early adopters, put them into first release. So as major changes start to come out, you can start to understand them. You can start to test, validate them. Think about your training, your help, and your support requirements related to that. Now, another thing that we've recently refreshed, we'll see if this is still projecting. It's not, so I'll just talk you guys through this, is the idea around the Office 365 mobile app. So we've recently updated the mobile app, not just for Windows phones, but also for iPhones and Android phones. So the Office 365 mobile app not only gives you the ability to view messages and alerts, whether it be service issues, whether it be new features that are rolling out, you can actually now start to go in there and manage things like a user account. So if you need to assign a user a license and it's not automated, or maybe you want to go ahead and change someone's role that maybe they should have been a SharePoint admin and they didn't have the right rights and you went through your change management, you can actually start to manage some of these capabilities directly on the mobile device, including the ability to potentially disable a user account. So if you need to, you know, you're out at lunch and you get this notification that so-and-so is leaving the company, they're going to a competitor, well, certainly you can disable the account in AD, and we'll go ahead and disable that through Azure AD when we go ahead and do the sync. But you may want to go ahead and terminate that account right away and go ahead and revoke their access to the service. You can actually do that directly through the mobile app. The last big thing that I'm going to spend most of this session going through is related to the Security and Compliance Center. So I mentioned earlier that we have significant investments inside of the SharePoint Admin Center. So we're going to spend some time in there going through managing site collections and sharing settings and other aspects. But the Security and Compliance Center is really a key area for admins to understand. It's great because you can have delegated permissions. So you can go ahead and maybe say that someone in a legal role can do compliance searches, so they can do e-discovery searches. Someone else can do auditing without giving them SharePoint admin access or making them Exchange admin or global admin. But oftentimes I find customers saying, well, I was delegated just the ability to manage the SharePoint admin center. Why can't I see some of the new admin features and go in there and manage DLP rules for SharePoint? Well, maybe because that the global admin hasn't granted you access to manage the Security and Compliance Center as well. So think about this. As we're engineering the service more and more, and you've seen some of this in the demos this week, we're trying to engineer common ways of doing DLP enforcement, audit, as well as e-discovery across the entire service. It's not just doing discovery and search and management against SharePoint. It's Exchange, it's Skype, it's other services. So more and more, some of those common features are being rolled up into the Security and Compliance Center to give you one-stop shopping. So customers will often say, I log in, I'm a SharePoint admin. Why do I only see these things? Why can't I access some of the newer things around DLP and compliance? And that's where people can go ahead and get added via different role-based access controls under the permissions section to maybe make you a compliance admin or delegate rights to people in your company, like your CISO and security team that might have to look at security and auditing and other capabilities. So that's a real quick tour of some of the most common things at the Office 365 admin level. We're going to pivot now and talk quickly about some of the key SharePoint Online admin aspects, and then really where I want to spend most of the time is answering those top five questions that come up. So from a SharePoint admin perspective, we're going to talk about site collection provisioning. We'll talk about some of the service level settings that you manage at the tenant level. We'll talk about hybrid, which comes up quite a bit when we're getting started moving into the service. And then we'll talk a little bit about managing the service via PowerShell. Now, a key thing to know is we're working really hard to add as much as we can directly in the administrative user interface so you don't have to go into PowerShell. But we recognize in large organizations, and I've worked at companies with 20, 30,000 users, you may want some scriptable, repeatable automation of certain key tasks. You may want to look at automating provisioning of things like site collections and managing and enforcing certain rules and permissions. So PowerShell is the IT pro's friend with a lot of us, and we'll go through some of the most common PowerShell commands and modules that you can leverage. But again, one of our key goals, and you'll see a lot of this, is to add some of the most common things for you in the GUI, so you don't have to necessarily go into PowerShell. But there are a couple of key things I'm going to show you, which today are exposed via PowerShell, that I think will help you with governing and managing your environment. So I'm going to jump back into my admin environment. And I'm going to hop back into the SharePoint Admin Center. And there's been a few announcements made this week around some of the experiences. So we're in the process of updating the SharePoint Online admin experience so it doesn't look like 2012. So it'll have a much more modern user experience like other parts of Office 365. I think Ruben did a session earlier in the week where he showed some of the new OneDrive for Business administrative interface, because not a lot of customers really understand, if they don't have a legacy with SharePoint, what a My Site was, what a user profile was, and building more and more controls specific to just OneDrive. But again, today I'm going to focus on what's built directly into the product and again refer you back to Ruben's session and others for some of the new admin experience that's coming soon. So one of the big things is around managing site collections. And certainly you can go in there and provision site collections directly through the user interface. We're going to talk about automated self-service site collection provisioning later on. But one of the things that you may notice is something we've changed recently is that you have the ability when site collections are being provisioned to specify a quota for the site collection. And site collections can now be up to 25 terabytes per site collection, so 25 TB per site collection, and we support file sizes up to 10 gigabytes per file. Now, you may not have that much storage in your tenancy, and for whatever your license, you can certainly go out and purchase additional storage at so many pennies per gigabyte per month. But we've had some customers say, I don't want to have to worry about managing reallocating site collection quota. So one of the things that we've done is inside of the general sharing, the general settings for SharePoint Online, we've actually added the ability for you to set the site collection storage management to be automatic, meaning it will auto-grow the site collection until it hits 25 terabytes. Or you can go back and still manage site collections manually. So maybe you don't want to have the site collection just grow. You want to have it set so that it's a 100 gigabyte site collection limit. If you had been using SharePoint Online before this setting rolled out about a year ago, you're by default set into the manual setting, but you can flip it to automatic if you want to. Another thing that comes up quite a bit is whether or not we want to show the sync button for OneDrive for Business. I'm going to show you some ways to control and manage sync later on. But another big thing that's come up quite a bit is the idea around what we call the modern SharePoint list and library experience. So it's set up by default that if we hit a document library or a list in SharePoint, it will try to use and render with the new modern experience. If it detects that there's a problem, there's something that you're doing in that classic list or that classic document library that isn't supported yet in the modern library experience, a list experience, we'll fall back to the classic. But again, something to be aware of, the customers have been asking, well, maybe I'm not ready to go with the new modern experience for lists and libraries. I don't have time to train or educate my users. Well, you have the ability to go ahead and turn that off and go back with the classic. And then the other big thing is related to managing specific information related to hybrid. So a lot of customers have asked questions about, you know, getting started with SharePoint Online. And Bill Baer did a great session yesterday around hybrid. Most of my customers that are large enterprises have a large amount of content in SharePoint on-premises. So one of the things they want to do is have a very consistent and simple user experience. So with SharePoint 2013 and enhanced in SharePoint 2016, we've really rolled out a great hybrid experience. There's a hybrid picker that is rolled out that you can use to help configure things in your on-premises SharePoint environment. Some of the most common things you may want to do is if you have your on-premises SharePoint environment, maybe it's your intranet, maybe you have some full trust code or some applications that aren't ready to go be ported into SharePoint Online, you can actually go ahead and say, I want to start with OneDrive and redirect the user that when they click on their profile or their OneDrive on-prem, we'll redirect them out to Office 365 for their OneDrive for Business site. Hybrid extranets is another key scenario. But two things that have been announced this week that are starting to roll out is the idea around hybrid auditing. So I'm going to show you the auditing capabilities for searching for sharing events, for viewing events and others. We can actually give you a single way of viewing, whether it's SharePoint on-premises or SharePoint Online, audit events and search from one place, as well as having a single way of managing taxonomy. So managing the managed metadata service and having the ability to master that in one place and have that synchronized between your online and your on-premises SharePoint environment. So there's a whole session from Bill Baer. I have some resources I'll point you to around hybrid. But again, I wanted to point that out because customers that are just getting started with managing SharePoint Online often get questions about how do I migrate, what do I migrate? And again, some of the most common scenarios we're trying to support is around hybrid OneDrive, hybrid extranet, as well as giving you the ability to leverage some of the cloud-only services like Office 365 Video and Delve, even when your content is living on-premises, but letting you link out to those services, leveraging things like hybrid search to allow your on-premises content to show up in the online search index, as well as be exposed through Delve without having you move that content up to the cloud. So the last piece before I jump into the SharePoint specific questions that we have out there is around managing PowerShell. So again, I mentioned that one of the big goals is to have as much as we can available through the admin interface, so you don't have to do PowerShell if you don't want to. One of my favorite things, though, to do if you do have to use PowerShell for some of those automated tasks or some of the things that aren't exposed through the graphical user interface is to use the PowerShell ISE, so the PowerShell Integrated Scripting Environment. Great way of having some IntelliSense, some debugging, the ability to actually work in a much more robust environment for creating and managing your scripts. You install the SharePoint Online module, which then enables you to see the commands that are available out there, and it'll actually help you to understand the different parameters that are available and then help you actually with building some of those commands. So you can actually go out there and start to look at, for the set SPO tenant commandlet, what are some of the available nouns and verbs that are related to that command, as well as what are some of the values to actually help you building those scripts, as well as linking out to the help information to tell you what commands and switches are available. So this example here is a very, very basic one where I'm connecting to Office 365, the Microsoft Online Service. I'm then importing the SharePoint Online PowerShell module, connecting into my tenant. So my tenant is this Portlet 0816. And then I'm asking it to authenticate as my admin account. It would prompt me for my admin password, and then go out there and actually provision a SharePoint Online admin site, give it a certain storage quota, as well as a specific site template, in this case, the team site template, and then go ahead and add an additional site collection admin, and then go ahead and grant the ability for that site to actually be accessed and used by that admin. So create the site collection, assign it a template, and then go ahead and assign another user as a secondary site collection admin. So we'll go through some more advanced PowerShell commands, but that's one of the more basic ones that typically comes up. So there are a number of sessions that are out there this week for people that are interested in our patterns and practices. I think there's actually a full session tomorrow. When you get these slides, the slide is hyperlinked at the top. It's in my blog post as well. But one of the things that customers may want to do is they may want to enable self-service site collection provisioning, but you may not want to have people just use the default team site template. You may want to apply your own rules, your own templates. So we've gone out and created some patterns and practices to help developers with actually automating and managing the site collection provisioning. Likewise, there's a whole set of resources out there on hybrid.office.com that walk you through how to manage and set up and configure hybrid with SharePoint Online. A key piece of hybrid is that hybrid identity that we talked about earlier, around having that same identity for on-premises as well as online, and that's where Azure AD Connect actually helps with synchronizing and managing those identities in a hybrid environment. So we're going to spend the next 50 minutes or so, though, really going deeper now into the five common scenarios. So the five most common questions that I hear is, how do I control and manage external sharing? How do I restrict access to approved devices and users? How do I prevent accidental information leakage? How do I report on and audit user activity across my environment? And then how do I manage a case where an employee is terminated, as well as deal with the content retention? So someone gets terminated in my company, how do I keep their content inside of OneDrive for Business so I can actually give access to someone else and actually take the content off their OneDrive site before that site gets terminated? So when we drill into controlling external sharing, we're going to look at things at the tenant level, the site collection level, some of the auditing capabilities around external sharing, and then lastly show you some of the PowerShell commandlets that will support that. So I'm going to jump in now and show you that. So back in the SharePoint Online Admin Center, I'm going to drill into the tenant level sharing settings. So one of the big things that's come out recently is the ability for you to go ahead and specify that if you allow people to share with people outside of your organization, you can restrict it to only external users that are in your directory. So some customers gave us feedback that they wanted people to invite external people to participate, maybe in an extranet site collection, but they didn't want them just inviting specific users. So think about this. At the tenant level, you set your sharing policy, and then you can override things at the site collection level. So one of the most common patterns I see is you set the least restrictive policy at the tenant level, and then at the site collection level is where you lock it down. So I'll show you an example where we're enabling external sharing on a site collection that's designated as an extranet with one of my business partners, but we're disabling external sharing on our intranet because we don't want people to accidentally share that out there. Another big thing that's important is you could allow people to invite people as anonymous guest users. So an anonymous guest user could be someone you invite with a link that they have view access or edit access to a document or a folder. Well, now you can go ahead and specify that those links will automatically expire after a certain number of days. So you want to make sure that it's auto-revoked, because an anonymous link is really tough to revoke once it gets out there, right? Because you put that link out there, unless you remember to remove it, people could still have access to that link. So you may want that anonymous link to expire after a certain period of time. You can also go ahead and specify what the default is when someone creates a sharing link. So is it something that is only to people who have permission? Is the default that it's creating a link for people inside of the company? Or is the default that they can go ahead and make it anonymous to anyone with that link? One of the big things that comes up quite a bit, though, with sharing is we may want to block or allow specific domains. So I may want to say, I want to only allow sharing with specific business partners. So that's more of a whitelist scenario. What I more often see people want to do, though, is I want to have a blacklist scenario. So I want to allow sharing with any domain, but I may want to block sharing with competitors of mine, consumer accounts, like a Gmail account or a Hotmail account, so you can enforce that. And then you can also enforce additional things around when someone gets invited, do they have to accept the sharing invitation with the same account that they're invited under? So we've invested and made significant improvements recently around some of the sharing settings to give you additional controls at the tenant level. If you drill into the site collection level, that then gives you the ability to say, well, for this specific site collection, I may want to go ahead and revoke it on my intranet. But for maybe this site collection that I'm doing things for an extranet, maybe I have a different set of sharing policies. So think about it. The tenant level is what's enforcing everything across all of your site collections. And then at your individual site collection level, whether it be through the browser or via PowerShell, you can enforce and manage and audit different sorts of sharing controls at the site collection level. Now, from an auditing perspective, one of the things that's rolled out over the past year is the ability for you to turn on auditing of events. So auditing of events allows us to audit, not just create, edit, and delete events. We can now audit a view event. Did someone view a file? Did somebody share a file? Did somebody accept the sharing invitation? Did somebody download the file? So we built in some controls around helping you with auditing, not just the create, edit, and delete events, but also the view and the download events. One of the things you can do, though, is you can actually start to create alerts. So you can go ahead there and say, I don't want to actually have to go out there and run this audit report and keep looking for this event. I can actually create an alert that may notify me when there's some sort of custom event. So I could say, show me alerts that might be related to any of these different sharing events. So automatically notify me when someone creates a sharing invitation, or they go ahead and someone accepts the sharing invitation, et cetera. And then I can automatically have that alert get sent to an admin account, to a distribution list, to a compliance mailbox, to help you get information without having to go out and run a report to actually see when people are sharing content. Now, from a PowerShell perspective, we've added the ability for you to do a few things. So there are two key commandlets that you may want to look at related to sharing. One is at the tenant level. You could set the ability that whenever someone shares something externally, you could automatically BCC either an individual user, a mailbox, or a distribution list. So I can go ahead and say, whenever someone does an external sharing request, BCC this invitation list, and in this case, it's sending it to just this one user. I could also go ahead and say whether or not I want to prevent external users from resharing content. And then, as I mentioned before, you can have different controls and settings at the site collection level. So in this case, I'm looking at the site, so that external site, and I'm changing the sharing capability to only allow it for external user sharing. So I'm turning off anonymous sharing. And then likewise, I could go ahead and disable the ability on that site collection for people other than an owner of sharing that. So again, a lot of that's exposed to the GUI, but you may have policies and controls and audits that are running in the background to say, someone created this site collection, and maybe there's some new data that's on the site. There's something going on that changes our posture. Maybe we thought it was okay to share the site collection, and once we started to see the content that's being shared, we may want to notify the users that it's inappropriate sharing, or we may want to go ahead and automatically enforce and revoke certain sharing settings if we detect some sort of violation of our policy. So I actually had this happen to me in Microsoft recently, where I had a site collection that was classified as being low business impact, and then someone on my team had posted content inappropriately on it. Microsoft IT actually caught that through an automated script, went in and notified me, and then actually started to revoke some of the sharing features until we remediated that and actually removed the file that was violating the policy. And all those sorts of things that you can automate from a reporting perspective as well as from a management perspective. So if I want to go back to my slides, we're going to talk about the next scenario, which is around restricting access. So first scenario is around how do I manage and govern external sharing? Look at it at the tenant level, look at it at the site collection level, look at auditing, and I'll get deeper on auditing in a little bit, and then think about some of the PowerShell commandlets that are available for not just getting notifications around sharing events, but also think about some of the automation you could do to either change sharing settings that are done at the tenant level or at the site collection level. The next scenario then comes up is, how do I restrict and govern access? And typically it comes down to, how do I restrict and manage access at the device level? So only have it be made available to manage devices. How do I control access? So when we think about securing content, we think about managing things at the user level. So does the user have the rights to do this? Then does the user's device have the rights to do this? And then does the location of the user, do we want to allow that to happen? There are a number of announcements made this week around some of the new conditional access policies that are coming inside of SharePoint Online. Well, there are already things like client access policies that are part of ADFS that can help with managing some of that. And there are already conditional access policies that exist as part of Azure Active Directory Premium to also help with managing and enforcing it. So I'm going to show you some of the things around managing access through client access policies and conditional access policies. And then we'll talk briefly about multi-factor authentication and things around the Active Directory authentication libraries, which the modern Office applications, whether it be OneDrive, whether it be Word, Excel, PowerPoint, now support to do things like allow us to restrict and manage it, restrict things like copy-paste between a managed and an unmanaged app, as well as allow us to go ahead and maybe require a second factor if a user's coming at this from an untrusted location or an untrusted device. So I'm going to jump into the demo. And I'm going to go back to the Compliance Center. And under Security Policies, you're going to notice that there's a note in here for device management. So Microsoft has a mobile device management product called Intune. Office 365 ships with a lightweight version of Intune called Office 365 MDM. So a lot of customers started off by using ActiveSync for kind of a poor person's, if you would, mobile device management tool. It was good when it was initially released many years ago, but it's kind of a sledgehammer for managing a device. If someone leaves the company, you're wiping the entire device. A lot of users are bringing their own device these days, and we may or may not want to just wipe their device, because if they leave the company and they had their personal photos on their iPhone or Android device or Windows phone, we may not want to wipe that. So Microsoft went out and actually created Intune and then built a version of that that works with Office 365. So the Office 365 MDM has a default MDM policy that if I drill into this, it allows me to go ahead and set up things around device access requirements. So do I want to require that the device be enrolled before we allow them to use that iPad, that iPhone, that Android device to connect into Office 365 to use the OneDrive for Business app? Do I want to make sure that the device is encrypted? Do I want to make sure that the device isn't allowing the ability to be backed up to another cloud service like an iCloud or some other consumer cloud service? So you have the ability to do a lot of things with the built-in Office 365 MDM. One of the things, though, that often comes up is customers may already have an existing MDM provider that they're using today. Right? There's a variety of them out there, Good, Mobile Iron, AirWatch, and others. One of the decisions that's been made just because of the fragmentation in the MDM market is that the Microsoft apps, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneDrive, can only be managed by a Microsoft provider. You may be happy with that other MDM provider, but you want to manage the Microsoft apps. So we also support the ability to do mobile application management. So what MAM allows you to do is to keep the other MDM provider you have in place, but then say, I want to manage the Microsoft applications. You can also do MAM in a case where maybe you don't want to require a user to enroll their device, but you want to manage the app. So using MAM allows us to do things like maybe block the use of the consumer OneDrive, but allow the use of the business part of OneDrive for Business, allow us to restrict and manage copy and paste between, say, an Excel file that came from OneDrive for Business and then pasting it into maybe a consumer mail application that's not being managed. So I encourage you to look at the built-in Office 365 MDM. If you do have another MDM provider that you're using and you want to manage the OneDrive app on iOS and Android platforms, then I'd encourage you to also look at the MAM capabilities that are there to help you provide some additional controls and management, including the ability to wipe the contents from the business part of the application if that person leaves the organization. Now, I mentioned ADFS. How many of you are using ADFS today? So a large chunk of you. So one of the things that has been out there for a while that I find that many of my customers aren't aware of is this idea around client access policies. And I didn't set up an ADFS environment, but I'll link you out to this article. One of the things that customers may say is, you know what, I want to allow access to users on devices, but that device has to be on the network. It has to be on the corporate network, either physically on the network, or they have to be VPN'd into the network. So client access policy, since ADFS2, allows us to do a number of things around blocking access from all clients, including blocking things like ActiveSync and blocking different applications. But there's the ability to have more fine-grained policies. Now, we've gotten a lot of feedback over the years around client access policies and some of the limitations and the challenges of managing ADFS and making sure that ADFS is highly available. Because if you're running ADFS on premises, you are the authentication provider. And if your ADFS environment is not available, then the user can't authenticate against the service. So a lot of customers, as they're moving into the cloud, are looking for ways to not have to manage servers like ADFS. And they couldn't get rid of ADFS because one of the big benefits they were getting was around network access locations and what's known as conditional access policies. So Navjot, in her session yesterday, showed what's coming up soon with SharePoint Online. So SharePoint Online is adding conditional access policies built into the product. So it's not in first release yet, so I'm not going to show it to you. But the idea there is you can define different network locations directly in the SharePoint Online Admin Center. There'll be a user access section in there, and you can specify that someone can access SharePoint Online only if their device is connecting to us from within inside of this network location. But Microsoft also has conditional access policies built in today into Azure Active Directory Premium. So how many of you are using Azure Active Directory Premium today? A few of you, okay. So Azure Active Directory Premium can do a number of different things. One thing it can let you do is use Azure AD for single sign-on against non-Microsoft applications. So other SaaS apps like Salesforce and Workday and others, you can use Azure AD Premium for. But Azure AD Premium also has some advanced management capabilities, some advanced MFA capabilities. And one of the big things that's recently rolled out in preview is the ability around managing conditional access. So Azure AD has recently gone through a refresh portal as well. And if I click into the Azure AD management section, I can look at managing access to a variety of different applications. Now, the Microsoft first-party apps, like SharePoint Online, are still not accessible through the new portal. So I'm going to go at it through the classic portal. But when I come into this environment, I can start to look at the different applications that my company has enrolled and has access to with inside of Azure AD. So I'm going to go ahead and load that up real quick. And then I'm going to search on Office 365. And I'm going to bring up some of the Microsoft applications. So you'll notice here, I can manage things around Exchange Online, Yammer, but we're here to talk about SharePoint Online, inclusive of OneDrive for Business. So I can start to see user sign-ins, unique user activity. I'm going to go in and configure this. So one thing that I may want to do is I may not just want to have a blanket conditional access policy for anyone that's connecting from off the network. So I can go ahead and say I want to enable access rules, and I can go ahead and specify allowed groups of users or blocked groups of users, right? So I can either make this rule be for specific users that I want it to be or have it as kind of an opt-out list. So if there's a list of people that I don't want the rule to apply to, and you'll notice here that I can go ahead and do things like, say, require multi-factor authentication when the user is not at work. And the way you define that is by putting in the IP address range of what your network looks like. But one of the things you could do, and this is what Microsoft does in our environment, is we have things set up across Office 365 where if I use my work device, which is my Surface Book here, there's a certificate on the device. When I'm on the corporate network, I don't get asked to log in. I don't see sign in for Outlook, I don't see sign in for SharePoint, OneDrive, et cetera. If I take this device and I leave the Microsoft network and I go home, or I go to Starbucks, or I go somewhere else, it does not let me automatically access it. It asks me to authenticate, and in my case, I use my certificate on the device to authenticate. So it's a trusted device, it's a managed device, has a certificate, but the network location may not be trusted. If I then go ahead and use my home PC, which is an unmanaged device, it's not enrolled, it's not a Microsoft device, it will actually allow me to connect to it based on Microsoft's policy, but it's going to go ahead and require me to do multi-factor authentication. So we actually use our phones within Microsoft to either get a text message, a phone call, or there's an authenticator app for Windows, iOS, and Android where I have to use a second factor to go ahead and authenticate against this. So one of the things you can do is go ahead and enforce those policies, and I'll show you things later on around, you know, blocking and managing sync between managed and unmanaged devices. But often it's not just the device, it may also be the network location where the user's coming from. And you may want to protect and make sure that there's not a case where there's a compromised identity, where someone's account's been compromised and they're trying to access the service, not just off of the network, but maybe even a case where it's not even the right user. So these sorts of conditional access policies with MFA are helpful. And then you can also go in there and start to manage from a device perspective. So with Intune, there's additional capabilities for managing things, but you can start to look at for these applications that are on these devices, whether they be browser-based apps or native apps. So a browser-based app like accessing SharePoint Online or OneDrive through the browser, or a native app such as the OneDrive client or the OneDrive app. And you can look at for different platforms, whether it be Android or iOS. Maybe say the device has to be compliant before we'll allow you to use the app. So the device has to, again, be encrypted, not be jailbroken or rooted, et cetera. As well as go ahead and say maybe if it's a Windows device, that the device has to be domain joined, whether it be through Azure AD domain joining, and be marked as compliant. So again, think about as you're thinking about user access, external sharing is great for people outside of the company. The next layer then becomes for people inside of our company. How do we do things around protecting the device, protecting the identity, as well as thinking about and protecting the network location to make sure that people are connecting from an appropriate device on an appropriate network? How are we doing so far, right? You guys with me? Cool. All right, so the next scenario. Is around preventing accidental data leakage. So the scenario here is I have content that I want to protect. So the first thing we're going to talk through is the ability to manage and block syncing, so blocking the sync client from syncing on certain devices. We'll then talk about encrypting the files and protecting the files through rights management. We'll talk about data loss prevention for looking for sensitive content types that might be out there. And then lastly, talk about some of the new advanced security management capabilities that have been rolling out inside of Office 365. So if I jump into blocking sync. So there is a PowerShell commandlet that's been out there for a little bit called set SPO tenant sync client restriction. The one thing you can do is you can go ahead and say that we'll only enable the sync if it's on a device that's domain joined. So these GUIs you're seeing are the domains. So the idea here is that I may allow the sync client to take my content offline on the device, but only on a device that's domain joined because the device is being managed. If I go to my home PC, you may allow me to connect, but only connect through the browser. You're going to block my ability to actually run the sync client. You can also go ahead and set restrictions around whether or not there are certain file types that are not allowed to be synced offline. So if you're a company that has maybe CAD drawings or other types of documents that might be sensitive, you can block the offline sync of certain file types. And then you can go ahead and force and require that people use the new next-gen sync client. So maybe not the legacy Groove client. Folks are familiar with the next-gen sync client that started to roll out last year that allows for selective folder sync as well as sync reliability. Well, again, on your managed devices, you can push that out and make sure people have the latest client. But maybe on those unmanaged devices that you're allowing them to sync to, you may not want to have them using the old sync client because it's not having as much from a management and control perspective as well as a user experience perspective. You can block syncing to use the new next-gen sync client and actually blocking sync from the old Groove sync client. From a rights management perspective, we've made an investment certainly around rights protection, information rights management. So Azure RMS allows you to create RMS policy templates. So a policy template could be something around, this is company confidential. If it's an email message, do not forward it, do not allow reply all. Well, we've actually made an acquisition called Secure Islands that's now part of something called Azure Information Protection. And the experience here is it's giving the user the ability to have information that's classified. So we can classify the content automatically based on where the content's coming from. And a user could go ahead and maybe override the classification level. It will go ahead and stamp the content with the classification level. But you can also then start to drive and enforce rights management policy. So a user may not be thinking about information rights protection, but they may be thinking that something might be company confidential, and they can go ahead and enforce that this content is restricted to executives or Microsoft full-time employees or others. So the great thing here is helping users to be educated that if they have super sensitive content that they want to make sure is not being leaked, that that content is being encrypted and protected. So if the file gets uploaded into SharePoint or OneDrive and then someone downloads it, someone shares it with somebody else, The file itself is also protected with an initial layer of encryption that can enforce the rights on the file regardless of where the file goes. We're working to build even more RMS controls natively into SharePoint Online as part of some of the management experiences. But the best way today to really protect that super sensitive content is through users leveraging the RMS capabilities in the products. RMS can protect not just Office documents, they can also protect non-Microsoft documents and can be encrypted and decrypted across Windows, iOS, Android, and Mac platforms as well. So beyond that, we have the ability, though, we've built in a data loss prevention engine. So folks are probably familiar with the DLP capabilities that have been out there since Exchange Online, the ability to look for things like a sensitive document type based on a document fingerprint. SharePoint Online also supports DLP, including OneDrive for Business. So in this case, Garth out here has uploaded some files, and you notice that some of these files have been classified as violating company policy. So if I zoom in on that, you'll see that Garth has uploaded a file that has some sensitive content, in this case, a credit card number. So what DLP allows us to do is look for 80 sensitive content types. I'll show you how these policies get created, but there are standard policy templates ensuring financial data compliance. So looking for credit card numbers, social security numbers, bank routing numbers, ensuring HIPAA compliance, PCI compliance. So there are a number of policy templates that are out there. Today, these policy templates will, one, audit and notify someone that a violation has happened, but it can also go out there and start to revoke access to it. So if Garth has access to this file, we can go ahead and revoke Garth's access, revoke access if it's being shared outside the company automatically, as well as notify an admin. And over time, we're adding even more enforcement, such as the ability to automatically apply rights protection and go ahead and even potentially delete the document from the library. But over time, we're adding more and more enforcement and actions beyond just the policy identification. So if I look at this from an admin perspective, and I go back into the Security and Compliance Center and go into DLP, you'll see that I've created a rule that's looking for credit cards. So as I mentioned before, there are 80 sensitive content types we can scan for. We're adding the ability to add even more custom sensitive content types. I could just pick from a policy template, such as saying I want to protect against violations related to US financial data. What I did for this one is I actually went ahead and just created one that's only looking for credit cards. And when I did this, I have the ability to go out there and say, I want to look for it across all SharePoint Online sites or all OneDrive for Business sites. Chris McNulty showed yesterday as part of NavJot's session that we're adding a central way of creating DLP rules that apply not just across all of SharePoint and OneDrive, but across all of Office 365. So today the experience is I create DLP rules in Exchange Online, and then I create another set of DLP rules inside of SharePoint and OneDrive. We're working on unifying that so it's a single DLP policy enforcement. But even right now, you can start to apply DLP rules. It may be different site collections or different users have different levels of rules for what sort of content can be shared on different sorts of sites. So maybe it's a bit more relaxed on site collections that are internal only versus sites that you're allowing for external sharing. Once we trip that DLP rule, in this case, the credit card number, I'm applying the rule to find any credit card number with a minimum number of one to a maximum number of any credit cards. And then I'm going ahead and blocking people from sending an email or sharing that document. And I'm also going out there and notifying the admin, as well as giving the user that policy tip that's notifying them that, hey, I don't know if you realize this, but that file that you just put on that site has some sensitive content because maybe Ronnie didn't realize that that file that he just uploaded had credit card numbers. He thought he meant to upload the other file and he accidentally uploaded the wrong one. And we give Ronnie a heads up that, hey, Ronnie, we don't think you meant to do this on purpose, but here's a tip that this file you should go out and review. And until you do that, we're going to revoke access to the file to just you to make sure that someone else doesn't accidentally get access to that. We can also go out there and generate incident reports that can, again, notify someone such as a compliance officer. One of the big things, though, is we've built some reports and auditing capabilities that are out there. We work with third-party security information event management solutions. So we can work with not only Microsoft tools, but also third-party security vendors. So if you already have a tool that your chief security officer and their team is working with, where they're looking at monitoring all security events and incidents across the company, there are actually APIs that are exposed, and a lot of our partners have tapped into the APIs to actually extract some of these events into other security event management systems to help you having a single pane of glass for monitoring and managing all of the compliance, looking for DLP rules and auditing events across not just Office 365, but also other solutions. So there are some additional reports that I could go ahead and run if I wanted to. I could go out there and look for DLP policy matches, which I don't know if I've had any recently that have kind of tripped the rule, but you can go out there and start to look for any sorts of cases where those DLP rules have been matched and which sort of policy has been recently matched. So you can see that today. My friend Garth went ahead and uploaded one file, and I can actually get information on how many violations are out there, which rules being violated, as well as information across those services. Now, the other thing that has come up quite a bit, though, is it's great that I have the ability to go out there and research and look for these sorts of events, but a lot of customers want to have automatic policy enforcement and management. Microsoft went out a while ago and acquired a company called Adalom. Adalom is what's known as a cloud app security broker, or a CASB solution. There's two flavors of the Adalom product. One is built into Office 365, called Advanced Security Management. And what Advanced Security Management allows us to do is actually go out and apply and enforce additional policy templates beyond just what's included in the box with Office 365. So one of the ones that I created based off of a policy template that exists out there, so I can look at different templates that exist with inside of the system. So I can look for things like a general anomaly. So a case where someone might be using a sanctioned app. So maybe there's a case where Bob went ahead and logged in to Office 365 in Boston, and then 5 minutes later he logged in from China, and then 10 minutes after that he logged in from San Francisco. Well, maybe Bob's remoting into different systems, or he shared his credentials with other people, or maybe Bob's account's been compromised. So maybe I'm gonna go ahead and automatically revoke Bob's access. We can look for cases where maybe an admin is logging in from a risky IP address. So there are cases where there are known botnets that are out there, and we think that your environment may be under attack. But we can also go out there and look for cases where someone is doing a mass download. So remember the scenario we talked about before, that I can manage and block syncing from PowerShell to say only allow syncing for machines that are domain joined. That blocks the sync client. Well, what if Susie's a really smart, tech-savvy person? She knows she's leaving the company, and the company allows her to use her personal device, and they blocked her sync. But she's going to go in, and she's persistent to get all these different files from her OneDrive. So she clicks download, 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 and she starts downloading the files. Well, we can actually have an alert that goes out there and looks in this case at Garth and says, there's a case where Garth went out there, and I set the rule for looking for more than five files being downloaded within, I think, 10 minutes. And we trip this alert. So we can be notified of the fact that the user is going into this environment and they're explicitly downloading a number of files, which, again, might be a valid action, or it might be something around suspicious behavior that you may want to look into. It's also great for having forensics after the fact, right? So if that person's leaving the company, you got that call, you suspended their ID, you have to go back and do some research on what were they doing in their last week, the last couple of days at the company, because they knew that as soon as they gave their notice to go to a competitor, they're going to be walked out the door and their account was going to be turned off. Or maybe they started downloading the customer file and some of the other assets off of a site because you gave them access. You can actually get some auditing and reporting on all those things that they were doing over the last week or month to get some information on what's going on. So in that case, we talked a lot around the auditing of information. So we talked about how do we manage and protect against accidental data leakage. The fourth scenario that comes up quite a bit is around reporting on user activity, right? So first we talked about blocking and managing sharing, then we talked about controlling the identity of the device, then we talked about protecting the content. Well, now that we know how to protect on it, again, thinking about the case where Susie's leaving the company to go to the competitor, how do we do those forensics on what's been going on? So one case is looking at things after the fact to do some auditing and reporting. Another case is looking at just general usage information. How many people are using the service? Who are the top users of SharePoint and OneDrive? Looking a bit further on auditing, in addition to those alerts that we set up before. Looking at how do we do things around search and e-discovery. So maybe we don't just want to discover content and discover events. We want to put that content on legal hold because maybe there's a legal matter that's going on for some of that content in SharePoint and OneDrive. And then lastly, some additional things that are available through advanced security management. So if I go back into my environment, there was a great session that was done yesterday around some of the usage reporting capabilities. So inside of Office 365 today, you have the ability to do some advanced usage reporting. So these are pre-canned reports that help you look across all of the Office 365 services, Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive, Yammer, Skype for Business, and look at user activity. So I can drill into OneDrive for Business as an example and start to look over the last week, the last month, even up to the last 6 months, look at user activity within the service. I can start to see who are the most active users, how many files do they have within inside of there, how much storage are they using, as well as what are the most active files, as well as their last access within the service. One of the things that was announced yesterday, there was a session yesterday afternoon, is we are now starting to roll out and preview the Power BI content pack. So if folks are familiar with Power BI, you can build advanced reports and dashboards. So we're actually building a pre-built Power BI content pack that will allow you to connect directly to the usage reporting solution, get the raw data we have within the service, get some pre-canned reports, some dashboards, some charts, but then if you want to, start to mash this data up with some of your own line of business systems. So I start to see information around people sharing files, people using the solution. Maybe I want to go ahead and figure out, are there certain departments or certain users that are more active than others? Maybe I want to find out how they're using it, why they're using it. Maybe find out why people are not using the solution. Maybe there's an education opportunity to help with end user adoption and training. So this usage reporting is something we've been asked for a lot. We've built some pre-canned reports that are here, and then starting to roll out soon in preview the Power BI content packs, which will allow you to connect directly to our service, have some pre-built dashboards that you can tweak, and then bring in external data from some other system, an HR system, correlate it with activity and other audit data that you might have, and start to build some of your own reports and dashboards that then you can share with someone, like an executive, that you don't want to give access to be an admin in Office 365, right? You don't want to make them a user admin or something else in the service to get access to the admin reports. Build them a nice dashboard or report through Power BI, publish that out, and allow them to view that information. From an admin perspective and an auditing perspective, we talked a lot before about managing alerts. Under search and investigation, we have the ability to do an audit log search. The key thing to know here is that this is off by default for SharePoint Online and OneDrive for Business. So if you haven't already, go in there, and the first time you do it, you see it at the top of the page that auditing has not been turned on. It will say start auditing activity. By default, Exchange is being audited. SharePoint and OneDrive is not. Once you turn that on, it will audit your admin events, the Microsoft admin events, and there's a great session that was done talking about the customer lockbox and the fact that Microsoft admins have no standing permissions against your environment, and you can actually have the ability to be part of that approval process in the case that there is a support incident that requires access. You can actually audit on the Microsoft admin access if it's been approved, your admin access, as well as your user access. If I start to go in here, I can start to filter again on sharing. So I can start to look at cases where someone created a share invitation, they accepted it, they shared a file, et cetera. I can look for download events, et cetera. And I can start to filter maybe based on a certain date range. So let me go back to maybe the start of August. I can filter on certain users. So again, if Susie was just leaving the company and I want to go ahead and find out what did Susie do, I can go back there and start to audit on this. So you can see out here, I get great information around what Garth was doing. I can see that Garth shared a file. I can see who Garth shared that file with. I can see what activity happened, not just for Garth as well as other users. And I can see, again, the IP address that the user was sharing that from. So whether they were on the network or off the network, I get some great forensics and information around that. So again, as I mentioned, there is the ability for you to go ahead and connect this audit information via APIs. So again, there's a set of APIs for the management activities that audit and log information, not just for SharePoint and OneDrive, but Azure Active Directory, Exchange, and other Office 365 services into a unified audit log. You can get at it through the GUI here. You can get at it through the APIs. But there are also PowerShell commandlets. So if I close this down here, I can actually go out and connect through this unified audit log and actually audit all events from August through today. So if I go ahead and execute this and then give it my admin credentials, and I'm going to give you all these scripts after the session as well. I'm going to publish them out to my my blog after. But if I go ahead and start to run this, it's going to go out there and it's going to query the unified audit log. It's going to look for things that happened between August 1st and today, and it's going to look for a specific SharePoint activity. So in this case, a case where someone accessed a file, and it's going to show me for a specific user ID. So again, if I wanted to, I could start to filter What did that person do within a certain date range? I can certainly query through the user interface. I can query through the APIs. But we're also starting to expose that information directly through the unified audit log through PowerShell. Now, part of the search and discovery may not be just searching on the audit. It might be thinking about Susie was leaving the company because she knew she was doing some bad things, and she was maybe sharing unauthorized information with other people. She had some suspicious activity that was out there. I can actually look at things from a discovery perspective. So I can start to do a content search. In this case, I'm looking for a certain keyword, but I can start to do discovery across not just Exchange, but also SharePoint inclusive of OneDrive for Business. So as someone that's in a compliance or audit role, I can start to search across all of my SharePoint online and OneDrive for Business locations, and I can go out there and start to query for things like the use of the word sales. I can look for other events, so I might look for things related to things that were authored by somebody, things of certain file types, things that have certain titles. I can look for who the author of the document, et cetera. So I can get some great forensics to start to look for information within the environment. So not just looking for audit information, but actually start to look at deep contents within there, looking at the title of the documents, looking at the actual full text of the documents. Now, if I needed to, I can also go out there and do e-discovery. So again, Chris showed yesterday, McNulty, how we're adding a new user interface on top of some of the discovery capabilities. In this case, we've started to merge the Exchange e-discovery capabilities. We had SharePoint had case management into a new way of doing e-discovery across the service. I've created a case for marketing. So maybe there's a case going on where there's something related to the marketing department. And similar to that discovery search, I can go out there and look across all of my SharePoint environment, all of my Exchange environment, and I can actually do queries and add other conditions. The great thing about this, though, is I could also put content on legal hold. So think about the case where, again, we're doing search and discovery, but now we also need to go ahead and put those documents on legal hold. So maybe there's a case where we had a sense that something was going on with Susie, we haven't terminated her, we haven't found out that she's leaving, but we think there's something going on, we've done a discovery, we start to put the content from those different team sites, from her OneDrive for Business site, on legal hold. And if Susie starts to think she's deleting these files, we're actually keeping versions of the files in the background that we can then do discovery, hold, and actual production of the content across Office 365, whether it's SharePoint Online, OneDrive for Business, or other services such as Exchange. And then lastly, from an advanced security management perspective, I already showed you some of this, but I can get some additional reports and auditing around not just things like that mass download, but also cases where, again, if Susie had been an admin, what sort of locations was she logging in from? Where was she logging in from? And I can also go out there and start to look at the discovery dashboard and see information out there. I can start to discover other apps that are being used. But I can also go out there and start to do some more advanced reporting. So advanced security management really lets you do some, not only advanced auditing, but advanced enforcement of suspicious activities for your users, for your admins. It can also help you to discover, with what's built into Office 365, other similar cloud applications that Susie might have been using that are coming through your firewall. She's using Box and Dropbox and other services. And the full Microsoft Cloud App Security solution can be used to discover not just Microsoft SaaS applications, but there are hundreds of other SaaS applications it can discover. And it can also help you with managing other SaaS applications like Box and Dropbox and others as well. So there's a version of this that's built into Office 365 as part of the E5. And then there's the full Microsoft Cloud App Security to help you with identifying and managing cloud applications outside of Microsoft. So the last scenario, and I know we're pretty short on time, is around managing employee termination and content retention. So we've talked before about how leveraging Azure AD Connect, we can manage and master the user's account on premises. We can terminate the account if someone leaves the company. We'll show you how we can manage and disable their account, as well as how we can apply retention policies. And then I've got something that I just discovered about 2 weeks ago that is one of the most common questions that I've gotten from customers that we can solve today through PowerShell. So I'm going to flip back over for my demo. One of the things that we get asked a lot is, what are some of Microsoft's best practices around managing things around user account termination, things around secure access, et cetera, as well as constant requests for how is Microsoft audited, managed as a service? So inside of the Security and Compliance Center, you have access to the Service Assurance area, where you or people you designate can access the compliance reports. And you can access our governance risk compliance reports that are out there, our ISO reports, our SOC reports, and actually see the independent audits that are out there. But we also get asked a lot about, well, how does Microsoft manage their services? What are different things that I should be thinking about inside of my environment? So we've created a number of FAQs and common documents that walk you through some of the most common scenarios. And one of the ones that I'm going to show you real quick is something called the Office 365 Customer Security Considerations Preview. So this document allows us to actually open up an Excel workbook and look at some of the most common controls that are there within the service. So you think about, there are a number of things that Microsoft does within the service to protect and manage your users and deal with retention and backup and all that other good stuff. You may have concerns around things we talked about around data leakage, access control, et cetera. But one of the things I get asked a lot is around that case where we have an employee that's been terminated. What do I do if I want to make sure that contents in their mailbox are still available? Well, I can put that mailbox on a rolling legal hold and make sure that even if I remove a license, the contents in the mailbox can still be discovered and produced if I need to. Well, one of the most common things that often came up was what happens to OneDrive for Business when someone is being removed from the company. Well, this workbook allows you to go through and links out to the actual TechNet articles that give you how the process works when an account gets terminated. So when an account actually gets terminated inside of Azure AD, the default is that after 30 days, we're going to go ahead and delete that account. We'll notify the person's manager if the manager is identified on their profile. We'll also, if there's not a manager identified, try to notify an admin. But the default is that after 30 days, we're going to go ahead and delete that content. I'm going to show you there's actually a switch now that you can set at the tenant level where you can change the default behavior from not keeping the content on the OneDrive for Business site for 30 days, but set the ability to keep the content for up to 10 years. So a lot of customers have been asking, well, what do I want to do? What if 30 days isn't enough to actually go ahead and get that content off of Suzy's OneDrive? Well, I actually want to keep that content, but not pay for that license perpetually, not have to worry about licensing that. I want to remove access to that OneDrive, but keep the content without putting that OneDrive on legal hold. So this workbook that I wanted to show you is great because that's how I actually discovered some of the stuff I'm going to show you in a second. Now, another big thing, though, when you think about that user account and that account management. So we talked before about things like Azure AD Connect. So Azure AD Connect is how you're synchronizing and managing those identities from your on-premises environment. So if a user gets terminated within your company, I'm sure that you all have great identity management processes that handle account termination. You terminate the account in AD, Azure AD Connect will go ahead and synchronize that. If you're doing password sync, it synchronizes a password change, usually within 30 to 60 seconds. Account adds, account deletes, account changes, like name changes, usually sync within 3 hours. You can also force a sync. Well, what if you want to do something faster than that? So again, Susie's being walked out the door. We want to terminate her access. Well, in this case, I don't have Susie, but I have my friend Garth. I can go out there and actually look at Garth. And if I click into Garth, and I could do this through the mobile device, as I mentioned before, but I can actually go in there and I can not only look at what are his rights and whether he's an admin or not, I can go out there and automatically block his sign-in. So I can go ahead and kill his account within the service. Another thing that just got announced this week, which is actually showing up in my environment, is inside of OneDrive for Business. You can not only go ahead and change and manage access if you wanted to grant access to Garth's OneDrive to somebody else. So maybe the manager attribute wasn't set. You want to go ahead and grant access to someone else on the team. You can grant access to other people. But one thing you can do is you can actually go ahead and initiate a sign-out. You can go ahead and basically force a sign-out for Garth across all the devices, all the apps that Garth's using within the service. So it's a one-time sign-out initiation, but basically it'll go ahead and terminate the sessions for that user across all their different devices. So yeah, we disable the login, we initiate a sign-out, we sign that person out, we terminate their account inside of Azure Active Directory. So a number of great ways to help with managing that user experience when someone gets terminated. So again, I highly encourage you to look through this document. There are a number of other documents that are inside of that trust portal that I link to on my blog that go into a lot of what I covered in more depth, that goes into the settings inside of MDM and multi-factor authentication and other things. But we try to, as much as we can, document some of the best practices in these white papers and publish them for you. So I've got about 5 minutes left. I'm going to wrap up with some of the resources that are out there. So I mentioned that I have a blog that's out there on TechNet. This link, I created a short friendly URL, the aka.ms/the-session-title, BRK3028. I actually published this about 2 weeks ago. So I published a lot of the articles and resources I'd be referring to today. What I'm going to do is after the session recording is done, and I know it's published out there, I'll update the blog post with a direct link to the slides as well as the session recording. And then I'm also going to go ahead and post the 5 different PowerShell scripts, which I forgot. I was going to show you one more thing. So the last bit I wanted to show you that I forgot, I apologize, is this is that PowerShell commandlet that's linked to on my blog that if you wanted to change the retention policy for that user's OneDrive, it's called the Orphan Personal Sites Retention Period. The default is 30 days. You can set this to a maximum of 3,650 days or up to 10 years. So this is a tenant level setting, but you can change the default behavior that we're not going to delete the user's OneDrive site within the typical 30-day window. We can keep it, in this case, for up to a year. So this is something, again, that I found out that today's exposed through PowerShell. The team's working to add it as to actually expose it through the admin GUI and then give more controls over time to not do it at the tenant level, but actually at the user level or the group level, so not all OneDrives may have the same policy. But this is a great thing you can start doing today to start to retain OneDrive content longer than the default 30 days. So again, when you go out there to the blog post, I have links to the PowerShell commandlets. I referenced some of the switches that you may want to leverage. I linked out to some of the white papers, some of the TechNet articles that you may want to leverage. There were a number of sessions that were either presented earlier this week that are available on Channel 9 or are being presented later today or tomorrow or Friday. So I pointed out a few. The Keep Your OneDrive and SharePoint Content Safe, that's the session I referred to yesterday that NavJot and Chris McNulty did that went into some of the new capabilities that are rolling out over the next few weeks, or a few months rather. The next session was the session from Bill Baer, which goes deeper around hybrid scenarios. And then there are a number of other sessions that go into things around patterns and practices for advanced site provisioning, as well as a deeper dive on each of the topics. So I tried to cover some of the most common scenarios. There are, for the most part, 75-minute sessions that just focus on DLP or multi-factor authentication or mobile device management. My goal today was to cover a lot of the most common scenarios and then point you out the 3 or 4 different ways that you can accomplish these and give you enough to go back to then either, you know, refer to my blog to get the details on, or if you want a 75-minute session that just goes through DLP, there's a session that's out there just on that. I did a session earlier this week at the MTC Experience. I'm going to have a few minutes up here after to take questions. I will be at the Microsoft Technology Center theater booth tonight from 5 to 6. So I'll be there for an hour. We're doing a Ask the Experts kind of open office hours, myself and a number of my colleagues at the technology centers, which the MTCs are a global resource. There are 40 MTCs across the world. And again, we help customers with strategy, architectural design, workshops, proof of concepts to help you with look at evaluating, deploying, consuming Microsoft services such as SharePoint Online and Office 365. I'll be doing a 20-minute theater session tomorrow afternoon around 3:30. At the MTC Theater, which is in the middle of the expo, downstairs in B. And I'll be going into 5 of the most common PowerShell tips, so things beyond what I showed you today. I'll be going to some more advanced PowerShell scenarios tomorrow. So that is my contact information. Again, feel free to look at my information out there on the blog. I do post quite a bit on Twitter, so I've been tweeting a lot of different announcements and news that are out there. And I'm happy to take questions up here for another minute and a half at the mics if there's questions that you have. And I'll hang out here for another 10, 15 minutes if folks have questions, or see you tonight at the MTC Theater. So thank you.